Well, hello there, folks. Great to see you again. Welcome back to Your Money and a Cup of Joe. I'm Ryan Ruff, your moderator. But as always, I've got Joe Caleo standing by, and we're going to be getting into another wealth-related discussion here on the show today. And you're lucky because we're back for another market recap today. We're going to be looking back at quarter two here of 2024. I know that does date this episode, but we want to make sure we get timely information out to you folks so that we can review what Joe and his team are talking about and, of course, maybe some expectations for the near future as well. Before we get into all that we have in store for you today and looking back at quarter two and its performance, let's say hi to Joe. Joe, good to see you today. How you doing?
Ryan, doing well. Good to see you. Not only will we look back at quarter two, but we'll look ahead in quarter three. So I'm excited to look both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, let's start with the fun stuff, right? The big gains. Talk to me about some of the areas where we saw some gains this year and this past quarter, of course.
Yeah, not too surprising at the end of June, right? Communication services, those are your search engines, and technology, right? Your chip makers, your software companies, technology, both communication services and technology were both up over 17% year to date since January 1st. So those are the clear winners for the first 6 months of this year. But there's one, Ryan, that's I think a little surprising beyond that. So when you were a kid, do you remember the story of the turtle and the hare?
Yeah, of course. Of course. It pays to be slow and steady, right?
Slow and steady wins the race, right? So utilities are the slow and steady of the stock market, right? Slow and steady wins the race. Well, utilities were actually the leading sector in the market about 4 to 6 weeks ago. Well, and as the demand for artificial intelligence has increased rapidly, utilities have done very well. They were up 7.5% through the end of June, year to date, surprisingly. Other areas that have done well, financials, energy, industrials, healthcare, and consumer staples, all up between 6 and 9% for the first 6 months. So a lot of winners so far this year.
Love to see it. Now, got to be the negative Nelly. Let's look at the flip side of the coin then. What are some of the losers, Joe, if any?
Only one sector down for the first 6 months, real estate, not too surprising. Low interest rates rising rapidly, putting a hurt. Real estate down 4.3%. Housing hasn't turned over like it has in the past. Mortgage applications were down 13% year over year. So that hurts real estate overall. Pending home sales down to their lowest point since 2001. Inventory of existing home sales down now 18% versus where it was a year ago. So real estate's the big loser.
All right. Well, we'll be keeping our eye on that one, of course, as we move into Q3. But Joe, let's talk economic trends. That's always a fun topic. What are you seeing on this front and your team? What are you guys talking about?
So we were noticing, Ryan, that rail shipments are up again and again. And it seems like every week for the past 6 weeks or so on a year-over-year basis. So we want to see where they are for this week compared to this week last year. So for the past 6 weeks, at least, we've noticed on a year-over-year basis, rail shipments is up. And that means that's a sign of future economic activity because it hasn't quite been spent yet, right? So where are people spending their money? Are they spending their money? Well, June spending intentions show a year-over-year acceleration. So it's kind of conflicting here because consumers are saying they're feeling less financially secure, but consumers are buying more than they were a year ago. Now, what are they buying? They're actually buying more store brand products and doing more comparative shopping online. So they're being very wise about their purchases. Also, Ryan, even though school just got out for the summer, back to school buying intentions are already in the research category. Interestingly enough, 40% of shoppers are saying they will spend more this year than last year, but only 10% of shoppers say they plan on spending less for back to school shopping. So we're watching those trends and where people are going to spend.
All right, good to know. Let's turn our head towards a very hot topic at the moment. Of course, you know, we're coming off very recently. We had our first presidential debate ahead of the November 2024 election. Joe, what effect, if any, does that have on the market and its performance? And how do you and your team look at the investors and their preparations ahead of the U.S. election later in November?
But Ryan, I want to bifurcate this. What do we think will happen in the markets? And then what should investors do? And I'll explain why in a second. So let's just take, if former President Trump comes back into office, his administration, and if it's particularly supported by Republican majorities in Congress, they would likely focus on trimming regulations and cementing prior tax cuts, as they have done in the past. The primary beneficiaries could include fossil fuel stocks and financial services, while there could be higher tariffs on imports, and that could harm U.S. companies with global supply chains. So we are watching that closely. Conversely, if President Biden stays in the race and becomes president, he will likely continue to support initiatives benefiting green energy efficiency, and electric vehicle makers. So we're starting to see the bifurcation of where the markets could have influence based upon who and what is happening in Washington. Now, here's the other side of it. What should investors do, Ryan? So much of that, they need to take their personal wants and emotions out of the picture. So research has shown us that investors who get disappointed in the election often become more conservative, and investors who get happy because they voted the way the election went get more enthusiastic. So they often are bifurcated on how they allocate stocks in particular and vote with their excitement or their disappointment. And oftentimes we tell people, let's favor positions that mitigate volatility. Portfolio construction is best treated as an apolitical exercise, and that's really important post-election time.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It's probably tough to kind of curb some of those emotions for better or for worse based on your viewpoints. But no, that's good to know. And obviously, I know you guys are going to be keeping an eye on that as we get closer to November and, of course, following November. Let's switch gears now, Joe. Let's talk bonds. Bonds have lost money, I want to say, in the last 3 or 4 years that we've been seeing. Is it time to lock in bond yields? What is your team looking at here?
Yeah, it's interesting. So they made money in bonds last year, but for the first 3 months of this year, it was definitely in a loss, and it's close to where it was at the end of June, depending upon the type of bond. So let's look back and see what's influencing bond rates. The U.S. core CPI, Consumer Price Index, rose on a monthly rate of 0.16 in May. That was the smallest increase since August of 21. And that's following encouraging inflation prints in April. So it seems like inflation is moderating. It's coming down. The Fed chairman, Mr. Powell, downplayed the latest dot plot and stressed that the U.S. central bank remains data dependent. So we do think markets will start to price a lower long-term interest rate over time, once the Fed begins to reduce rates. But still, that hasn't happened, right? Ryan, let's think back. In December, when we did the year end of last year, there was a 100% chance of 6 rate cuts this year. We've not had one yet. And you and I talked about they may end up holding all year. Why? Couple of reasons. The markets have a tendency to be very good in election years, and the Fed tries to stay out of the politics of an election year. Plus, while the interest rates have moderated, they've not gotten to the point of actual correction territory. So with all of that, you may still see them be on hold for the rest of the year. More on that in a minute.
Good to know. All right. Hey, let's switch now over to cash holdings specifically. What are you advising clients to do right now, essentially, with cash holdings based on what you guys are seeing?
All right. So let's talk about cash and mix that back with what the Fed's doing in bonds, right? So first, while the U.S. hasn't cut rates, the global trend of rate cuts has begun. First, in March, the Swiss National Bank became the first major central bank to actually lower rates. It then surprised markets by doing a second rate cut last week. Sweden has cut, the Bank of Canada has cut, the European Central Bank have all reduced rates. And there is the expectation that the Bank of England will join this trend with a rate cut in August. So there is the possibility then that the Federal Reserve will cut two 25 basis point cuts this year, possibly starting in September. I still say let's wait and see. Cash does look to deliver progressively lower returns with global rate cuts. So historically, cash only outperformed bonds early in the hiking cycle, say, for example, as we saw in 2022, with global bonds starting to outperform even before rates peaked. We do think markets, though, could be underestimating the likely number of cuts over the cycle. And in the latest projections, the Fed officials put their estimate of longer run Fed funds rate at 2.8%. I think it's just a matter of when they start cutting, Ryan, not if, but you still may see that go into 2025, and then you'll see cash start to come down.
Roger that. So one more thing for the team to keep their eye on, of course, and we'll continue to update you guys here on the market recaps, of course. But Joe, you had mentioned earlier on one of the losers in this past quarter of Q2 here in 24 was real estate. Do we see any sort of rebound coming? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel, if you will?
Yeah, Ryan, I think in particular, private real estate investments have faced both economic and structural headwinds in recent years. Real estate values were certainly weakened by swift monetary tightening policies, right, where rates were low and raised a lot in a short period of time. So that hurt valuations, and it made debt servicing more expensive. And that's still out there as properties roll off what was locked financing, and now they have to refinance. Rental incomes on older properties in less appealing locations may not have kept pace with inflation, especially for assets not meeting green building standards. And then finally, with more remote working since the pandemic and the rise of e-commerce, that's hurt weaker parts of the office and retail sectors. So I'm not convinced real estate is on the rebound yet. But if we do see, let's go back one and two questions ago, if we see a moderation of interest rates, that should give real estate the beginning of a breather or catch its breath, so to speak. So we're watching to see how that impacts there.
Joe, this is great stuff. We had saved one of the juiciest topics for one of our final questions here, and that's surrounding this whole idea of AI. With all the gains that we have seen with tech this year, is it too late to invest in AI or tech overall? Or if not, how should somebody look to go through that process and consider what tech, what AI stocks they should be adding?
Ryan, this is the proverbial buy low, sell high. But this is really important because if you're always looking at buying low from where a stock has come from, you could miss out gains of where it will go higher in the future. So we think AI will continue to keep driving tech outperformance, right? As you mentioned, tech stocks have delivered strong returns in the first quarter, and it has been driven by AI. With global tech, semiconductors have posted the strongest returns. And so we forecast global tech earnings to grow by about 20% this year. That's earnings. And AI memory sector revenues will rise 55% this year and 35% next year. Ryan, remember, we covered this earlier this year, but not everybody's listening to all of them thoroughly. 72%. Per year for the next 5 years in AI. That's the expected growth of artificial intelligence. So it is really important. But the story doesn't end in AI or with AI, as large tech names are also offering good quality exposure. So let's broaden out technology a little bit. Tech company balance sheets are strong, and a positive driver in a high period or in a period of higher interest rates and slowing economic activity. Earnings revisions are improving. It's adding confidence that key end markets have reached a trough. And we expect the AI market to be dominated by an oligopoly of vertically integrated foundries and monolithic players along the value chain. So there's a lot of opportunity here. And we see those opportunities in both large and small tech companies. The sheer pace of growth in the AI industry means that many investors are still underallocated overall. We do favor semiconductor companies powering AI data center infrastructure and chips, We also like mega cap tech with chips, cloud, and generative AI models exposure. So while we're talking about tech, let's look downstream a little bit towards some of those areas in industrials that supply some of the equipment for AI and utilities that are providing the power to the AI centers or makers. All of those will play a role. All of those will benefit. So it's not too late. You do want to be strategic and you do want to be tactical. Strategic thinking, the big picture of things, having an allocation, tactical, having a one-off here or there. Investors may consider that exposure via capital preservation strategies that balance the upside participation along with a way of managing potential downside risks. So all of that comes into play then is how do we balance that portfolio for both the short term and the long term? So it's not too late. Think about having balance, even in subsectors within technology that includes pieces of AI.
This is great stuff, Joe. I would imagine the natural next step for many folks that sit down and listen to this conversation today, recapping last quarter's market performance and whatnot, is to go back and probably review what they have and what's coming, you know, based on the expectations that we lined out here today. So for anybody, Joe, that would enjoy having that conversation, maybe with you or your team, getting a stress test, a second opinion to look over their financial world, what would be the best way somebody could get in touch with you guys just to have that conversation, talk about where they're lined up versus what you guys are seeing coming here with the remainder of the year?
Yeah, Ryan, I think you're right. I think it's a stress test or a second opinion of the portfolio as well as the wealth management picture, because making sure you've got not only the right investments in your portfolio, but allocated in the proper account and tax structure becomes incredibly important. So I'm happy to say if they want to give us a call or shoot us an email, we're happy to take those steps and then see how we can be helpful.
Fantastic. Well, Joe, I know you've got clients to serve. You've got some, phone calls to take. So I'll let you get back to doing that. But I appreciate you being with us here on the podcast today, jumping into Q2. And I'll see you back here for Q3's recap in due time.
Cheers, Ryan. Have a great day.
Of course, you too, Joe. And hey, folks, we're going to take a final moment, as we always do, and thank you all for spending some time with us here on the show today. If you did enjoy the discussion, you learned a thing or two, you've got some considerations for your own portfolio, well, make sure that you hit that subscribe button on whichever platform you checked us out on today so that you don't miss out on some of these great market recaps as well as other wealth management related discussions that Joe and I have here on the show. Before Joe, I'm Ryan. We're going to go ahead and say so long now. We appreciate you being with us on Your Money and a Cup of Joe. This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Financial Services Incorporated. UBS Financial Services Incorporated does not verify and does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information presented. This material is made available for use by CEG. Neither UBS Financial Services Incorporated nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services Incorporated offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review the PDF document at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Incorporated is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, member SIPC. Joe Kaleo at Kaleo Wealth Management Group, UBS Financial Services Incorporated. Office address 200 West Highway 6, Suite 400 in Waco, Texas, 76712.